Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have Greg Olsen and George Kittle interviewed together for Tight End University.
Greg Kittle.
Yeah. Greg and Greg, both good friends of the program, longtime friends. We had them on. Also, Greg Olsen, we asked him about his son who just had a heart transplant. Very emotional, but great listen. So check it out. We are going to talk about the death of the process. We're going to talk about Game 7 Bucks Nets. We're going to talk a little hockey. We're going to talk a little U.S. Open. Bryson DeChambeau.
Ooh, that's
yeah.
Good.
That's
good.
A little preview for what we're going to talk
Big
about.
Cat, I call him Dyson DeChambeau because he blows.
Oh, damn. That's just, listen. Buckle up for more. We also have Monday reading, and Billy's got his recap of the show. So, pack show. Hey, guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy won, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com. Okay, let's go.
Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by Chevy Silverado, the strongest, most advanced Silverado ever. Today is Monday, June 21st, and the process is dead.
R.I.P. R.I.P. We had a good run. We had a good run. This was going to be the postseason where we judge whether or not processes actually work. Turns out they don't.
Well,
it was a it was a legacy game for just baskets, being able to shoot.
Well, I was
turns out that if you can shoot, you're probably going to win an NBA playoff series.
I was going to say, I didn't think it would catch up to him, but it finally did. Ben Simmons just refusing to shoot a basketball into a basket in a basketball game. It ended up, that matters.
Well, he ended up not dunking. He's afraid of dunking, too.
I thought
that if he had the opportunity to go up with like a nice, solid, two-handed slam dunk from inside the protected circle, I didn't think he'd be afraid of the basket in those circumstances.
Wait, but hold on, PFD. Rim protector Trae Young was there.
True.
So
good point.
That's a scary thing. No,
actually, I'd like to now go back on my take that he should try dunking free throws, because that wouldn't work either.
No, nothing works. He is allergic. I've never seen anyone just be like, I am not going to shoot under any circumstances. So we got a lot to talk about, but let's start with some Ben Simmons stats. So we talked about this on Thursday's show, but Ben Simmons now officially finished the last four games of this series without attempting a single field goal in the fourth quarter. That's your point guard.
Honestly impressive.
That's your point guard. He attempted three field goals in the fourth quarters of this entire series, two of them in the first. He did finish perfect 3-for-3, so there's one nice spin zone. Because he's now out of the playoffs, Ben Simmons has the lowest free throw percentage in a single playoffs in NBA history. So he beats out Shaq. He was 34.2%. Shaq's worst season playoff history was 37.4. So that's another bad stat. And then finally, I mean, Ben Simmons, did you see afterwards Doc Rivers was asked, like, can he be a point guard on a championship team? He's like, I don't know the answer to that.
We'll see.
I will see.
Yeah, that's not great. It's not great when your head coach is saying that. Like, do you think that you can win an NBA game with Ben Simmons as your point guard?
And
MVP candidate Ben Simmons.
And I feel really bad for Sixers fans. I know that Hank, we're going to give Hank a chance to just rip them apart, which he will.
I honestly feel bad for Ben Simmons.
No, like, I don't.
Imagine
no,
making it.
I don't.
Imagine making it to this stage in your professional career, only to just discover your one glaring weakness, which is you can't score.
No. He can't shoot. He's afraid of shooting. No, I don't think he physically can shoot.
I think that he is, in fact, right-handed, and Kevin O'Connor has apparently been on this for a while.
No, he's...
A lot of people think that he's right-handed.
No, he's non, there's he's like, non-dominant.
Yes.
Neither hand.
He doesn't have a hand that works.
No hands work for Ben Simmons and shoot it.
I always thought that saying the Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott quote didn't really make that much sense. He actually proves that you do, in fact, miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Yeah, like saying Ben Simmons can't shoot is actually wrong because, well, no, it's right in that when you say he can't shoot, you're saying he's a bad shooter. He can't shoot in that he mentally cannot make himself shoot.
Do you think he's got that disease, the brain thing, where you're afraid of holes? You remember when the iPhones came out and everybody pretended to be afraid of the camera?
Oh,
for like
that
a week?
Was like the even. No, that's
tryptophobia.
Yeah, tryptophobia.
Right? He might be afraid of holes.
He needs to get hit in the eye, so there's three rims.
Exactly,
like LeBron. It's that clip of him passing the ball when he was standing under the hoop with Trae Young coming over, who he's got like a foot on, was just. It's insane. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happens in a basketball game, Hank. The floor is yours.
This quote just came out like a few minutes ago, so you probably didn't see it. But Joel Embiid said, I'll be honest, I thought the turning point was when we had an open shot and we made one free throw.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and that makes perfect sense. You can't have a guy out there who does... That would be like if we went out there. I know. Obviously, Ben Simmons is a great defender. I'm not knocking him there. He had 11 assists. Like, he had 13 assists. So he's doing stuff that have an impact on the game. But if you put any of us in an NBA game, we would pass up open looks because we would be afraid of getting blocked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we would do the same thing.
The only person that's compared, like Rajon Rondo early in his career was kind of like that, where he just didn't shoot or look for offense, but he also would at least shoot layups and, like, you know, if he needed to get a shot, he would get a shot.
Yeah, like, go
even
towards
if it was ugly,
if you have an open layup, you should probably consider taking the open layup.
Yeah, Joakim Noah would not look at the hoop when he was like at the foul line, but he would still, just to keep him honest, do his weird motion. It's absolutely like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. And listen, we also need to put some blame on Doc Rivers, who, like, we went through that on Thursday, but he has not a great history outside of the one championship. And Embiid is a great, great player, and he's the guy who you're going to build around if you're the Sixers. But he was so sloppy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just a sloppy guy.
He loves falling down. I think his
hands... He had 8 turnovers.
I think his hands might be too big.
He's just sloppy.
There's just... He's all fingers. He's just doing a lot of poking. And there were a few times where, you know, it was clear that he was going to be the person that was going to provide all the offense. And if you make him drive to the hole in the fourth quarter, he's going to, like, bounce it off his shins every time. Like, I think he has a little mental issue, too. It's like they built an entire team out of Chuck Knoblauchs when he forgot how to throw the ball to first base.
Except the only guy who could play is Doc Rivers'
son, or his
son-in-law, who's out there playing in Seth Curry, who actually was playing well, but that's pretty much it.
And he was the one guarding Kevin Huerter.
Yeah,
Kevin Huerter.
We got to talk about the Hawks, but I want to say one thing though for the Sixers fans, because enough time has passed, an hour has passed since the end of the game. I actually think that if you're a Sixers fan, in a weird way, this is for the good. And I know that makes no sense on face value, because you can go through the entire process and you can point to a million different things that went wrong. You wish you had Jason Tatum, all these things. You wish you kept Jimmy Butler, traded for James Harden. But at the end of the day, this was going to happen no matter what. Ben Simmons does not want to shoot basketballs.
But they've lost so much value with him.
Of course.
But it's better you find out in such a spectacular failure than to have it be like a slow, like, death from 1,000 paper cuts where he kind of doesn't show up for series at a time. It's better that it happens in a great big way that's impossible to ignore.
But he's so young, he could go somewhere else and be nasty.
But someone will think, like, I think he still will have trade value because someone will think, I can fix that. I can make him better, because he still has elite levels to his game. It's just the whole point of shooting a basketball into a hoop is the game, and he just doesn't want to do that.
He might be the best player in the NBA if there wasn't a basket.
Yes. If
it was keep away.
If it was Hoosiers when they're not allowed. No, they didn't get to play with a basketball.
Mm-hmm.
When that scene when they got to when they weren't able to practice the basketball.
The four corners era.
Yeah, Ben Simmons would be elite. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're a Sixers fan, in a weird deep down way, I know how terrible this is, and that was truly horrific the way it all unfolded and the way they lost these games. I really do think there's a silver lining of like. This wasn't going to work, and now at least it has to change.
Yeah, and also, if you're a Philadelphian, your native mindset is always just being pissed off at your sports teams.
Popping the Super Bowl DVD.
This is like, you're like a duck in water if you're a Philly fan, because now you get to call into Big Ant and Angelo and be like, you got to blow the whole thing up, Big Ant. I'll take my answer off the air. You know, like, this is what you've practiced for your whole life.
Yes.
If Philadelphia became an elite sports city, I mean, well, let's think about it this way. After they win a Super Bowl, they grease up their light poles. People climb up them. Who knows how many lives were saved by Ben Simmons not being able to shoot
foul
shot?
It's true. Yeah, yeah. If you're a Sixers fan, if you're a Philly fan right now, you pop in the Super Bowl DVD, you think about Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins, and you just kind of – it's actually for the better because this was never going to work, and you hope that you get someone who can make Joel Embiid not have to – turn the ball over in every fourth quarter and fall on the ground because he's the only offense. Mm-hmm. I do want to give credit to the Hawks. Kevin Huerter, max contract right now, sign it. That was a legacy game for him. And so Trae Young was terrible tonight. We can all agree. It was probably the most fascinating game to watch in that it wasn't a very like great game. Game 7 Nets-Bucks was a great game. This game, though, was so fascinating because you had one guy in Ben Simmons who refused to shoot. And then you had Trae Young, who was having a terrible, terrible night and still was like, fuck it, I'm shooting every shot from wherever. And, you know, he ends up, like, it wasn't a great night for him. He did still make it happen with the assist. But the Hawks in general, no one picked them to go to the Eastern Conference Final. They are a great story. They're, like, I'm sitting here and I'm still thinking, like, the Sixers were a better team, but the Hawks deserve to win this series. They were resilient. Like, they came back from those games that they won where it was just horrific for the Sixers, and they deserve all the credit, and Trae Young's a superstar.
And we get to see another couple weeks of Trae Young doing just silencing crowds. The emergence of Trae Young, the troll, has been my favorite part of these playoffs, with the exception of the Suns and four guy. But, like, I love watching people get pissed off at Trae Young because he seems to actually enjoy playing that role of being the heel.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's really good at it.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to, like, I was getting all worked up for Nets Sixers next round. So I'm trying to figure out ways where I'm going to pretend that I'm actually excited about Hawks Bucks. Kevin Huerter, sweet nickname. They call him Red Velvet.
That's great.
Which is amazing. If you're a redheaded player, you're either going to have the best nickname of all time or the worst.
Yeah.
It's like the most, it's an extremely polarizing thing if you have a ginger that's good at sports, because you either have to, like, just call him, like, the Red Mamba, like Scalabrini, but Red Velvet is just, it's the smoothest nickname.
Yeah. And they deserve a ton of credit because I didn't expect this, and I was definitely wrong. And Trae Young is, having that type of guy on your team who is, even if it's not going well for him, he's like, one, he's going to help in other ways, but two, he's never going to stop. He has the exact polar opposite confidence of Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
He could miss 100 shots in a row, and he will still take a three-pointer from the logo and be like, this one's going
in.
Yeah,
next one.
Ben Simmons will pass up a million shots in a row, and on the millionth one, he'll be like, yep, still going to pass it up, too scared to shoot.
Yeah, we got sweet Lou Will, too.
Yep.
Even Pepper Lou.
John Collins just jumping all over people. I mean, they're a fun team, and I'll talk myself into it. And the Hawks crowds have been awesome. Like, yeah, we're going to get into this. It's good. It's good.
It's good. Everything's fine.
I would have liked to see the Nets, but it's good. It's good, guys.
Mm-hmm. Hank, do you have any last thoughts for Philadelphia fans out there? I know that it's kind of been like a tough love situation between them. Have you grown to respect them?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they tried their hardest. It's been, you know, 20 years since they made the Eastern Conference Finals. They were so close this year, and I think eventually they're going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
You're going to put your reputation on
the line? I do believe, I truly believe, you know, as much as I've said bad things about Philly, it's only been, you know, my honest opinion, and I do believe eventually they will make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Okay. So that's, you know.
Just trust the process.
Yeah, you can go to bed at night being like, yeah, a few more pieces here and there, different coach.
At some point. It's going to happen.
A bunch of injuries to other teams and other players. we can make it.
Yeah.
I wonder if Bogdanovich is
It's not like Atlanta
hurt?
Was losing a starter or anything. And one of their best bench players.
Yeah. But, fuck, man. Bogdanovich is definitely... You know what's funny is I always forget Tony Snell is on the Hawks. And if Tony Snell, if like the Hawks play the Suns and it's Tony Snell versus campaign in the finals, that would be very funny.
Yeah.
For me, just me personally, pretty much. But the Hawks deserve credit. I want to make sure that we stop, pause, and say that this team deserves a ton of credit because they just haven't given up. Like, they have been, people pick the Knicks, people pick the Sixers, and they just fucking, if they have to win it ugly, they win it ugly. If they have to win it with Trae Young hitting every shot, they win it that way. Bogdanovich, all those guys. Kevin Huerter is like, fuck, man. The Kevin Huerter game. Mm-hmm. It happened. That happened. Kevin Huerter game happened. All right, let's talk Nets Bucks. So I was there. It was an awesome game. Incredible game. It was an all-time silent arena moment at the end, flashing forward. So the Kevin Durant shot to end regulation.
That doesn't happen if it wasn't for the turnover right before that.
Yes.
Like, the game was pretty much over at that point.
But it was that. I still don't know how they didn't, like, I guess they, you don't want to bring a double with, like, 6 seconds, but it was so, like, I've never been in a moment where it's like, he's going to make the shot no matter what. It's just whether it's a three or a two.
I thought it was a three when he hit it.
Yeah, right. I did not. I never thought it was a three, although I posted a clip on my Instagram stories. The Jumbotron said three-pointer.
That's tough.
Which sucks. And they brought out the ropes for the front row to keep everyone
confetti
off. Yeah. And then I was like, wait, that was definitely a two-pointer.
But did he actually change into smaller shoes right after that?
No.
Or was somebody joking about that?
I think that was
okay,
a joke.
They pulled the wool over my eyes.
But that end of the game shot, that one was an all-time. We've talked about the moments that, like, the sounds that happen in arenas, the shriek, the stunned silence. To have Kevin Durant airball the three-pointer after an unbelievable game where he put the Nets on his back, and Blake too, but he did everything for them. Everyone looked around like, wait, there wasn't a foul?
That,
like,
shot
what
goes
happened?
In. Or it had to be blocked.
Like, is this something, and there's only 0.3 seconds left? Something's wrong. Like, it's basically everyone's like, no, this isn't the ending. Like, turn the machines back on. We got to replay
that. You know what that is? That's the Buffalo Wild Wingsification of sports that we're seeing.
Yeah.
So, like, anytime a big team experiences heartbreak like that, you do have that second, because you think maybe we're going to get bailed out. If it's soccer, it's like maybe VAR saw something different,
right?
Like, a goal is never really a goal until it's like cemented in stone, but on a play like that, it's just like it ends with a whimper. It's like, okay, what next? Something else has to happen. Now
we talk about it all the time with football, when you have a big play and you just sit there on a fourth down, you're like, so the flag's coming.
Yeah, you
and
wait
it just
for
doesn't
it.
You wait. That beat happened in the entire arena and everyone's like, oh wait, it's over.
You wait for the refs to huddle up, and then the announcer's like, I wonder what they're talking about. And then you have another 15 seconds where they're just actually saying, no, there's 0.3 seconds left, not 0.4 seconds.
Yeah, the game is fully over. Yeah. So that was only the third time in Game 7 history. This was a stat from our friend Kirk Goldsberry. Third time in Game 7 history dueling 40-point performances, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
The other times were Paul Pierce versus LeBron 2008 and Sam Jones versus Oscar Robinson 1963, which we obviously remember that game. I think Kevin Durant, like, gained from this.
Oh yeah, I mean, the shot at the end of regulation was huge,
and just the way this, like, Harden going down, Kyrie going down, the game five, this game, 48 points, where he just was so incredible. I think maybe not gained, because obviously he doesn't go to the finals, he doesn't go to the conference finals, but I think people appreciate Kevin Durant more than they ever have, watching him play without other players and being as incredible as he is.
And he had an all-time sad face, too, after that shot.
I know.
I felt so bad for him. He looked like a puppy.
He thought that the machines were broken,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's like, that's not what my shot
I'm
does.
I'm telling you, it was the weirdest feeling. Everyone was looking around like, wait, that's it?
Well, because he tried to do the exact same shot that he pulled off earlier, and you're like, no, I already saw this. This shot goes in.
Right.
I saw it. It happened like 5 minutes ago. That shot went in the basket. Kevin Durant doesn't airball a shot. That's probably what he was thinking. He was like, Kevin Durant doesn't airball this, Kevin. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough to see Blake's performance. I think how many times does Blake dive on the floor during one game?
He was awesome.
He loves the floor.
He was grit and grind.
Yeah.
All night long. And the Bucks deserve a ton of credit. Giannis, obviously. This is going to be, It might be their best chance to win a title, especially now that it's the Hawks. No offense to the Hawks, but I think people would pick the Bucks over the Hawks. It also was a great lesson in it doesn't matter if you suck as long as you can make some big shots at the end, because there was a moment going into the fourth quarter where Jrue Holiday was 2-for-17 and Chris Middleton was 4-for-16. And they both, like, Jrue Holiday had a John Starks game going. He was terrible. He was terrible. He ends up going 3-for-6 in his last 6 field goal attempts, and Chris Middleton goes 5-for-10 in his last 10. And it's like, that's, you can suck for 3 quarters. And that was kind of the difference, is those guys started making some shots and helping Giannis out, and that made the difference in the entire game.
I also like Coach Buds. Coach Buds has this look on his face all the time, like he's got resting scared face. He's just terrified of everything that's happening. He makes good moves. I think, was it a few years ago where we were like lamenting the loss of Joe Prunty?
Yeah.
Because he was an all-time face guy?
Yeah.
And I think Buds is a worthy heir apparent to that.
He looks like a dad who's coming down to tell the kids at the sleepover to like be quiet, but he's also a little intimidated by the kids.
Like there's one, like, he's there's like, I'm one
a,
big kid.
Yeah, I'm
there.
A little bit, like, they might kick my ass, but he's got the like kind of messy hair, the messy facial hair. He's barely slept, and he's like, hey, can you guys keep it? You know what? Keep having your fun. I'll just go back upstairs.
Yeah, or like a dad that gets called in for like a parent-teacher like counseling session, and he's not sure what the news is going to be, but he does know that his son very much did not want him to go to this meeting.
He's just tired. He's just tired.
He's tired, and he's scared. he just looks terrified all the time. But I love Coach Buds. I like the Bucks. I like their fans. That's the only thing about Trae Young is, like, I don't know if Trae Young can muster up hatred towards the city of Milwaukee. They seem to be kind of like... kind of like the Suns of the East.
I think Trae Young can do... I think that's what makes Trae Young special. I think he can muster it up for anyone.
Like, they don't... he can play the respect card.
Every
single
person.
I think Trae Young is going to muster up respect for just everybody in the media. I feel like we're overdue for him to be like, no one said that we could be here. They all said that we were going to lose in the first round, which is true.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, we definitely said that. So he'll just play like us versus the world card right now.
Yeah, the from a like just a storyline perspective, it also is great. Like the Nets losing, them coming back next year, they'll probably bring everyone back. They'll be a super team, but it does feel like they have to earn it a little more.
James Harden could also get really fat this offseason, because with a hamstring, he's going to have to give that rest for probably like a month, and a half.
That first half, I forget how much it sucks to watch James Harden play basketball when he's just looking to get fouled.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not looking to like do anything but get fouled. I actually... it was,
they got to get a little bit more Brooklyn with their game. I think Michael Rapoport was right.
Yeah.
How do we add like an element of Brooklyn-ness to the Brooklyn Nets?
True. I had a like one of those moments post COVID where you realize how much you miss the little things. I walking out of the arena, I just was talking about like James Harden fouls, and I got into like a spirited debate with a complete stranger about whether it's James Harden's fault for trying to flop or if it's the ref's fault for allowing that and like letting him do it and then giving him free throws all the time. And it was great. It was like, man, this was fun. Like, we were, you know, when you like accidentally hit the same pace as a stranger walking down the street, you're like, we're just walking together for a couple blocks here.
That's a major dude's rock situation.
Yeah, and I was just like, you know what? That was cool. All right, see ya.
Have we had the take yet that James Harden gets injured because he jumps into fouls? Like, he jumps at weird angles?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't get injured that much, but yeah.
But this year.
I got corrected by that.
This year?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going off what I see right now, Big Cat. What I see right now is a very injured James Harden.
It was, I don't know. I mean, it's weird having both the Nets and the Sixers when everyone thought that it was going to be like a collision course.
Yeah.
To have that be out. But hey, Hawks and Bucks, we're going to fucking enjoy the hell out of it.
David Stern would never let this happen.
Ever.
Ever.
Ever. Adam Silver was definitely like, what's the name of our mayor here in New York City?
De Blasio.
De Blasio.
Yeah. No, Warren Wilhelm, right?
De Blasio. He definitely looked like De Blasio sitting at home with his Nets jersey and Nets hat on for Game 7.
Yeah.
Like, let's go, boys. We got this.
God damn. I wanted Blake to get a chip.
I did too. But you know what?
I just wanted to see Dax on the victory parade with him.
Hopefully he stays. Hopefully, you know, we're going to get him on this summer. Hopefully he stays. Hopefully he gets the chip. Like I said, they're earning it now.
Yeah.
They're fully free agent again?
Yes. Yes.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Especially Blake year. Blake of the year season.
It is. He comes back for 2 days and you start mumbling your words.
Also, this was the curse of Lucky, the leprechaun.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could say that the Celtics beat the Nets.
How close do you think Kyrie was to coming back and playing? Probably like 95%? And he's just like, nah, I don't want to.
He definitely could have if he wanted to. He's probably waiting for the he's probably waiting for the conference finals.
I teed that up for you. Okay.
Actually, was Reggie Miller right?
Yeah.
If they had rested Kevin Durant and James Harden, do we as a nation owe Reggie Miller an apology?
Yeah, Reggie,
I'm sorry.
Kevin Durant ran out of gas in the overtime, which he absolutely should have because he played every minute and he put the team on his back. But, yeah, he could have used a couple extra minutes of rest.
Or a couple days.
Yeah, a couple of days rest. All right, our Suns are wagging. No Chris Paul, no Kawhi, so I think that evens it out. Devin Booker was insane. Scored what he had 11 points going into halftime, and I think he ended with 40.
Also, the Clippers game six on Friday night was one of the craziest swings in basketball I've
ever
seen.
Yeah,
yes, it was crazy.
And then after the game, when they were interviewing Mann, because it was the Terrence Mann game, right?
Yep, it was the Terrence Mann
and
game.
And they were interviewing him and Paul George at the same time. Paul George with one of the best spin zones that I've ever seen. He was like, you know, I always knew that Terrence had this in him because I look at him, I'm like, you know what? He reminds me a lot of me.
Yep.
Paul George is like a Hall of Fame. Don't let him answer a question for too long. Like if he gets to more than 30 seconds, he's going to say something not like terrible, just ridiculous.
No, I loved it because I could see the wheels turning in his head. It's like, dude, yeah, protect that ego.
I think that's how playoff P happened. I think he was just answering a question and he got too far down the road. And he was like, yeah, they call me Playoff P.
And then Ballmer's pumped to be there. Ballmer is the living definition of the word pumped.
Yes.
He's just pumped all day, every day. What's up?
If I was a billionaire like Steve Ballmer and the coach wasn't wearing a mask, like I feel like I just wouldn't be wearing a mask either. If I own the team and I was sitting courtside,
he looks like he's wearing the shittiest, most
uncomfortable mask.
Here's my theory.
It looks uncomfortable.
I think he's got like some sort of immune issue, maybe not him, but maybe somebody close to him, because he's the only person that's wearing a big mask.
I also think that when you get to a certain level of richness, you are like, my life is so sweet, I don't want to die. Under any circumstances. If I were his level of rich, I'd probably wear a mask all the time, because I'd be like, you know what? Even a common cold, like, this life I got right now is so fucking sweet, I'm not giving it up for anything.
He also probably, like a billionaire, walks into a room with the unwashed masses. He's like, I don't know what these pores have.
Right, exactly.
Like, they don't have access to all the future medicine I do.
He's got to make sure he keeps it clean. It is a very uncomfortable mask. His hug of Paul George was very funny, though. He was just, it's been a very funny hug playoff. Steve Nash and Kevin Durant after game five was awesome.
Did you see that video of Steve Ballmer just clapping it up in a room, just going, yes, yes, yes,
yeah,
just sweating through his shirt?
He wakes up sweating.
He makes Chris Berman look like the driest man in America.
Yeah, I think the shower just never takes for him.
No.
Shout out White Sox Dave. So the Suns, Devin Booker game. It was a Devin Booker game.
All I'm saying is Suns in four.
Suns in four. Devin Booker game. Although Suns fans, I saw there was a new fight video. Let's not make this a thing.
Mm-hmm. This one looked a little less chill.
Yeah, this one wasn't. We saw the full video.
Like a beatdown. Like you were a half second away from a curb stomp.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. The Suns and Four original video, if you watch the whole video, the Suns and Four guy had a full beer poured on his head, which, shout out the guy who got beat up, who did a post-interview. I actually respect. I've swung. I now like that guy. Because to get beat up, go viral, and then be like, you know what? I want my name and face more out there.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a level of lack of self-awareness that everyone should aspire to have.
No, this guy just likes having his name on the internet.
Yeah.
He likes opening up an app like Twitter and seeing his own face on it.
Right.
To him, that's fame.
Rough and
Rowdy.
And
anything you can do to stick around fame. He should actually try to fight Suns and Four guy, Rough and Rowdy.
We would do it. We'd put on that fight for sure.
I liked how he was saying that I just got scratched on my nose. I never actually got punched on it.
Yeah, you can see it. Like, I'd have a black eye. I don't have a black eye.
You give me another week, I'm going to think he actually won the fight.
Yes, yes. But, yeah, the Suns, they're a wagon.
Do we need to ask, though, like, whose man's is that team? Is it Chris Paul's team or is it Devin Booker's team?
I think
who's Batman, who's Robin?
I think they have the perfect age disparity where Chris Paul's old enough where he's just like,
yeah,
like, step under my wing, young guys.
Who's Batman and who's Catwoman not getting her pussy eaten?
I think Devin Booker's Batman.
But
he also, like, probably defers to Chris Paul.
I think it's like an old
dog,
old dog, young dog thing, where it's like the old dog knows all the tricks, but sometimes you need the young dog to go run down that tennis ball.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just the reality of it. So Devin Booker is needed very much so to be that guy who can carry the team and score a ton of points.
The young dog also keeps the old dog alive for longer. with the exception of Champ and Major RIP.
Yes.
But that's why a lot of people get a younger dog.
Yeah.
Because it keeps the older one active. So it's good for both of them.
Yeah, so 40-point triple-double for Devin Booker. Insane game. Insane game. Like I said, he had 11 points going into halftime. And then he just went off. And playoff B's been playing really well. But not enough for Devin Booker.
He's playoff okay now.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely deserves all the credit for that Utah Jazz series. Because Kawhi got hurt and that was it. When is Chris Paul coming back?
We don't know.
Okay.
So does he actually have the COCO?
I don't know.
Or is he like in advanced protocol stages because he was exposed to... Well, no, he's got the vaccine. So he wouldn't have to be in... I think he's got COCO.
I think he does too.
I hope he's okay.
If LeBron had it, he would
definitely
be quarantining,
but is symptom free.
Symptom free. Okay. Devin Booker's got this. Have you seen the cars that Devin Booker drives into the arena every day? It's fucking awesome.
Is it one of those spiders, one of those three-wheelers?
Well, he has a different one every time.
That's cool.
And they're all, like, old, souped-up Cadillacs.
It's got to be tough for Ben Simmons, too. Like, that's his ex-girlfriend's now dating Booker.
And Booker actually, like, knows how to shoot a basketball into a hoop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He can find a hole.
Yeah, that one's... That's the part that really kills.
That's an upgrade.
What is Ben... Like, Ben Simmons, what do you do? What do you do?
Someone I saw this on Twitter, Markelle Fultz also couldn't shoot in Philadelphia either.
True.
Yeah, true.
Maybe you just got to change the scenery.
But can he shoot in Orlando?
He learned how to shoot.
Better.
Sort of.
He's better, but...
I remember Markelle Fultz
he was broken.
Was on it. Yeah,
yeah, he was totally broken.
He is a little more fixed, yeah. So...
What about a hypnotist? That's what I would go for if I was the Sixers. Just, like, get the Men in Black thing and erase their entire memory of this entire playoff series.
Do you know what the problem is? I actually am now talking myself into, like, I kind of want Ben Simmons on the Bulls. Just because he's 6'10 and plays great defense and, like, oh, my God, the skills that he has. If he could ever learn. I think he's going to be getting paid a lot of money and be on, like, four or five teams. And every team's going to be like, if we can teach him how to shoot, he could be one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah, how old is he right now?
He's 25.
So that
he could be 24.
You can learn how to shoot. Chris Paul learned how to shoot. Rajon Rondo learned how to shoot.
He knows everything else.
Yeah.
He has everything else. It's just the shooting part, which is important. We should keep stressing.
Yes, it's very important. And
very important.
I think more important than the shooting is the mental aspect of I don't want to shoot. I think he just doesn't like shooting.
Right. Oh, man. All right, hockey talk real quick. Golden Knights tied up the series with the Canadiens, which actually kind of sucks. The Canadiens were up until... late, I think, in the third period. They blew that one.
They got the own goal, the Flurry.
Oh, they did?
He was trying to clear the puck behind the net, and it, like, kicked out, and they just scored it.
Well, that was...
With, like, 30 seconds
left. Was the last game. Tonight, they won in overtime.
Yeah, the Knights won in overtime.
They benched Flurry today, which is something that no one really saw coming until what's been happening in the playoffs with him. He's doing whatever the opposite of standing on your head is. He's had, like, a real sting. It might be a thing where they could come back, beat the Canadiens, and then Fleury's back in net next series.
And then the Islanders game was incredible, that ending. I made a point of going home and watching it after I left the Nets game, and it was like, I saw everyone tweeting about it, and like, nah, it can't be this good. And then I watched, like, how the fuck did this happen? So that was incredible. And shout out all the people who, when I was like, when game 7 is going on, and it was incredible, and everyone was talking about it, and I was like, this game is awesome. Shout out the guys who replied and were like, you're talking about hockey, right? Because the hockey game's better.
Mm-hmm.
Just always a competition. I love that. I appreciate that. It's good to keep that rivalry fresh for everyone. But that Islanders game was awesome. And we might go to the Cali on game 6. Maybe last game ever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we
go? The old barn. Close the barn down.
Get loud in that place. Butter knife?
Could be the move.
There's just really...
Oh. There could be a butter knife situation.
We cannot be able to butter knife our way in there.
Just pee before you go. Because there's like two bathrooms in the entire arena. And you have to walk all the way around in the concourse to get to
them.
I assume they have sinks. We might just have to dipe up for it, boys.
Trash cans work. I didn't break the seal on Saturday night until like the end of the third quarter. I've never been more proud of myself.
That
still
is
got it. Still got it situation.
So they... I don't know if they still make it. There was this invention... like 10, 15 years ago called the Stadium Pal. And what it was essentially just like a condom that you put on the tip of your pee-pee.
It was a catheter.
And then it had like a tube that ran to a bag on your side so you could go to a game and just piss on yourself all day.
Yeah.
We should do that. We should dipe up with the Stadium Pal.
Absolutely. All right. Should we talk some U.S. Open? I'm happy that we can talk U.S. Open because there was a moment on Sunday afternoon where if I were allowed to tweet... such things, I would have tweeted if Bryson DeChambeau wins this U.S. Open, I'm going to kill myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't tweet it because you're not allowed to tweet it. They would have banned my account. But I was thinking it at that moment. Thank God he sucks. Because so it was, he was minus five through eight with the solo lead. And then he finished, ended up finishing tied for 26th.
Yeah. I mean, we call him a lot of stuff on this show. We've called him a steroid user, a cheater, a dork, a loser, a nerd. What else have we called him?
Snowman.
Snowman. We call him a lot of stuff, but we've never called him a quitter until today. Mm-hmm. And he quit when his giant cleats didn't save him. What was the 13th hole on that drive that he hit? His foot slipped out from under him, mm-hmm, on his left foot. At that point, Bryson was like, I don't want to be out here anymore. And he quit. He is a mentally weak golfer.
Yeah.
And, which we already knew because he's like having heart attacks because somebody's calling him by the wrong name.
Right.
But this was even noteworthy for Bryson to show his lack of mental toughness.
Shout out the guy who, after Bryson sculled one over the green, was like, should have used a calculator on that one. That's a funny chirp.
Mm-hmm.
John Rahm, though, there was a moment, like, I don't know, maybe like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock at night on Sunday, where it felt like everyone wanted to lose the U.S. Open. No one wanted to win it. People were just imploding left and right. But John Rahm finishes with two insane putts. He was the guy who, I think if you talk to anyone in golf, he's like, oh yeah, who's the best golfer who hasn't broken through? It's John Rahm.
Yeah.
And he had the COVID thing two weeks ago where he ended up not, you know, had to pull out when he's got a 4-stroke lead going into Sunday.
Uh-huh. And I love his look. He's got, you know, every golfer either looks like an emaciated bat boy or like they just got stung by bees. He looks like he's having the allergic reaction to the bee. Like, he's just a swollen person.
He just has a nice pouch. Yeah, he has a nice, like, strength that comes from his belly,
yep,
that you just know he's going to be able to last.
He's got a huge
4 days of golf.
Big face to him, mm-hmm, big head.
He's a big John Rahm.
He's big John Rahm. Was he like 6'2"?
Yeah, the 6'6".
Big John Rahm.
We saw him at Shinnecock driving in a little mini sports car, and I was like, damn, that guy's too big for this.
And his wife has an absolute cannon. I don't know if you've seen the clips of, like, he went to some training camp. Some NFL team, like, invited him out. I don't know what team was like, hey, we should get John Rahm out here to catch a couple balls. His wife throws, like, a 35-yard spiral on a dime.
Yeah. I didn't see that. Stuff. They also got engaged at Torrey Pines, or maybe married at Torrey Pines.
Oh, really?
So very.
Is that his home track?
So I had the if you've never listened to golf on the radio, it's very fun. So I listened because I was driving into work. I don't know. He was like around like hole 13 or 14. So I put it on the radio. Interesting experience. The only thing I really picked up from it. Do you know Louis Oosthuizen's name?
Louis Oosthuizen?
Yeah. Do you know his name?
It's not Louis Oosthuizen?
No, his name is Lodewijkus Theodorus Oosthuizen.
That's so sick. That's a classic South African theme.
They, like, said it.
Yeah.
I was like, what are they saying right now? Lodewijkus, Lodewijkus Theodorus Oosthuizen.
Yeah, so Latin.
South African people, they like name their kids like you would name a Greek, one of the lesser known Greek gods.
Awesome.
It gives a little bit of class to it.
And Brooks was awesome. He's, you know, he's got a knee injury. He came back from a serious knee injury 6 months ago, and he still finished fourth, so now he's second and fourth in the two majors.
And he's never finished behind Bryson at a major in which they have fans.
I had a moment on Friday that I had to like kind of check myself. My son's birthday turned 2 on Saturday, and so his birthday party with all his friends was on Friday. So we had like kids over and like the parents, and we had the U.S. Open on, and one of the parents came over and was like, oh, how's Bryson doing? And I looked him dead in the eye. I was like, we're a fuck Bryson DeChambeau household, just so you know. And then I had to be like, wait, dude, you're at a two-year-old's birthday party. Like, this is going to be tough to explain.
It's a little aggressive.
So I had a moment where I was like, you know what? Maybe I need to cool off on the rivalry.
No, you got to keep. You don't turn down from 10, big guy.
He was so confused. Like, why did that guy just say that to me?
No,
so.
Also, shout out to the golf streaker. We had I feel like we don't get that.
Yes.
As often. So the golf streaker ran out there. He had two balls with him. He had he brought his own golf club.
Yep.
Are you allowed to do that? You can just go to a golf tournament with a club, like it's a mitt that you take to a baseball game?
Dude, I saw a guy at the Nets game with a basketball.
That's awesome.
So cool. Yeah. I almost hit it out of his hands, but who does that?
It's just, he's probably like just dribbling through the concourse, crossing people up.
Not a kid.
Yeah.
Not a kid. Like,
ball
mid-20s.
Life,
I'm pretty sure they sell.
It was not a sold one.
It wasn't like a team logo.
Nope.
It was a standard,
it was
like,
a
Wilson or Spalding
ball. Ball is truly life. I'm going to this basketball game. I'm bringing a basketball.
Oh, also, Jake, put a reminder in the file for us to bet the unders on all the first week of NBA games next year because they're switching balls.
Mm. There we go. I guess you can bring a club. Like,
yeah.
Why are people bringing full bags? I went to one U.S. Open. I wore a golf glove.
Yeah, I like that. I also like the dudes that show up in spikes.
Yep.
Like to get better traction as they're walking around, as they're chasing down their favorite golfer. Also,
Bryson could have used them.
He could have. Shout out to the guy that left his full case of Stella when Bryson's ball just like hit it and nestled up right to the side of it. There was a lot of weird shots. A lot of weird stuff was happening in the afternoon on the back nine. That was it Shoffley's ball got stuck in a tree?
In the tree.
After it hit off the golf cart? Or the golf path?
Bizarre. And Torrey Pines is just weird because you just have people parasailing. And what is that called? Parasailing?
They were the cameramen. They were taking the spot of where you would traditionally have the Goodyear blimp.
Drifts
above.
Regular guys are doing it, too.
Oh, I thought all the people up there just had cameras.
No, I don't think so. Those weren't just... No.
It seemed to me like
they're
something
fans
you would only see in like a golf video game.
Yes, and it just like an N64 game.
Yeah,
and it was just it's
it
just
was
very
windy
weird.
Though, so it was probably like good
parasailing.
Yeah, good
is it parasailing?
Parasailing or kiteboarding?
Kiteboarding?
I don't think it's kiteboarding.
Windsurfing? Is it windsurfing? Are they windsurfing?
I couldn't see close enough.
I guess they technically are windsurfing.
They are windsurfing, but that's not windsurfing.
I think they're paragliding.
Paragliding. I just kept on thinking, like, what if one of them crashes?
Or crash into each other, because
You
don't have, like, air traffic control telling you where to turn. It's just you're in the sky. The sky belongs to God.
Wasn't there one of those at the soccer game that crashed?
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was
a guy
parachuted
into the soccer game. Almost took out a full row of people.
Yes, yes.
I think he got caught on the spider cam, actually, when he was trying to land.
Anything from the Euros that we should talk about? People got really mad because I posted that screenshot of Ronaldo.
Germany.
And apparently he ran box to box.
Germany and
Who
Netherlands
cares?
Look good. France looks okay. Mbappe's 19.
France looks bad.
Oh, no, they look okay.
That was a loss. That was a tie
loss.
I know.
It's a 1-1.
That's a tie loss.
Which happens. England had a 1-1 loss.
Big
to Scotland.
0-0.
Nil-nil.
Even worse.
Nil-nil.
Yeah.
Big cat.
Even worse loss.
But yeah, so those are some bad losses from some of the favorites. It's going to be the same thing that happens all the time in soccer, where it's just the same four teams from Europe are going to get to the semifinals.
There's going to be Germany, France.
England is going to lose in the semifinals, although I am addicted to saying it's coming home.
Italy and Spain.
Yep.
Who cares?
Count. Oh, nice. I like that, Hank. And we had no PLL this week. So let's get to our Who's Back of the Week. Who's Back of the Week is brought to you by our friends.
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started. I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike. If you want to join Buns of Anarchy, wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Hank, your Who's Back of the Week.
My Who's Back of the Week is Red Bull Racing.
Okay.
Yeah.
They won in France this week. And that's now two races since we've had him on, and two wins.
So Horner is locked in on the toilet that he likes to piss in.
And they're in first in the overall standings now, right?
Red Bull is?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
In the Constructors' Cup.
Constructors' Cup. And Daniel Ricciardo had a good race as well.
He
so
did.
The PMT F1 bump is real. This was the first time I woke up. I was a little hungover, and I was like, oh, I can actually watch this.
It's kind of delightful,
weird.
Right?
Yeah, it's weird. I love the show. I really do like the show. I binged it in like 2 weeks. It's still, I'm getting used to watching it live because I don't really know what's going on.
So well,
it's hard
to
follow, like, who's doing well and who's not.
It is a little hard to follow, and there are a lot of people online who are pretending that they know a lot more, where it's like, let's all just admit here that we don't know what we're talking about. We're going to...
Overtake is about the only thing I know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're going to figure it out.
Push.
That was mega. Something about just waking up and having an announcer with an English accent is soothing.
Yeah.
It just works.
I've got a really bad take, but it's something that I truly believe, so I'll share it with you guys in this room here. I think the cars are too loud.
No,
if they could make the cars just like 20% less noisy,
do you know what?
I'd be all in.
I was actually listening to an F1 podcast. No big deal.
Sounds exhilarating.
It is. They were actually saying they were lamenting that the cars are too soft.
Oh, really?
They have gotten a lot softer with, like, you know, the electric nature and everything.
Uh-huh.
They used to be true American, not like, actually American
muscle car. Like, no, Ferrari, but no, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, American.
Like, some kick
engines,
you in the dick and fucking have a car that blows your ears out kind
of
engine.
How about this? I'll go either one of two ways with it: make them a little bit softer, or make them just really fucking loud.
Yeah, no, right, but now, people are saying it doesn't sound like, because
right
F1
now
racing.
It just reminds me of the vuvuzelas in car form, where they're just kind of they're there in the background and it's a high pitched hum and it's kind of annoying. So if it was a little bit quieter, I'd be happy. Or if it was just like make your balls shake. I would like that.
Go with that one if you want to be a real F1.
Okay, yeah, the cars are too soft.
They're too soft. They're basically racing toy cars.
Yeah, it's the pussification of America of Europe.
Yeah. No, seriously, that is like a big, that's actually a real complaint.
Okay.
The cars are too soft.
You talked me into it. I'm on board with it.
Yeah.
Is that it, Hank?
Also, track and field and swimming. Tis the season.
Yep.
Oh, I saw someone. I can't remember. I should have screenshot it. Someone tweeted out, and I thought it was the greatest idea ever. I'm sorry that I'm not giving you credit. Please let me know. I'll give you credit. The Olympics, if they had a lane for just regular average people for comparison, would be so incredible. Mm-hmm. If they had the 10th lane in a swimming pool, be like, all right, let's find a 15-pound overweight guy and just let him swim just to show how slow an average person was, it would be so fascinating to watch.
I'd be cool with that. Another two ideas that I would have for swim, well, also like dye the pool different colors. I think that'd be sick. If it was like the Eastern Washington field or the Central Michigan, like give me some different looks to the playing field. And then if you took, what if one of those lanes just was basically an aquarium? So you had all sorts of natural sea life in the pool, but there was like glass that divided it, so they weren't going to swim into the other guys' lanes. But just like in the middle of the pool, you get some octopuses, you get some flounder, or maybe a couple of sharks. I think that'd be sick.
That was I pitched that idea to Mark Cuban, the real Shark Tank, where it's a pool full of sharks, and if you get to the other side, then you get investment in your deal.
Yeah, I mean that sounds good.
It would be fun to watch.
That sounds good too, but it would be nice to see some marine life in the water.
Yeah, I how about just. We'll settle for the dye, the myth dye that makes a color when you piss in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we can watch and be like, hey, that person pissed.
Yeah, they all do.
Yeah. No, I know, but it would be funny to watch in real time, like, oh, they pissed. Oh, they pissed.
And if the dye was actually brown, so it looked like they shat in the pool.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That'd be funny.
Either way, just get normal people, like a normal guy just throwing the shot put 18 feet.
Yep.
Would just be a very funny thing to watch.
Yep.
All right, what's your who's back?
My who's back of the week is Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber's back in a big way. My favorite baseball player, Kyle Schwarber. He's a Nat for life. We love him in this city. We're going to keep him around. We're going to do whatever it takes to keep Kyle Schwarber home in D.C. for as long as we can.
He embodies D.C.
He embodies D.C.
I know you're like trying to troll me, but you can't troll me.
No, I'm not.
I love
him. I'm saying I love him too. He's
right, but
amazing.
I know you're trying to troll me.
Look at that guy's face, and you're like, that guy is an East Coaster for life.
What I'm saying is I love him. I'm happy that he's doing well. Like, he's the type of guy
three taters
that I don't – like, he could go to any – he could maybe even – I would even say – I would probably not say it out loud, but if he was on the Cardinals and he was hitting home runs, I'd still – like, there'd be a small part of me like, fuck yes, Schwarber, you're the best.
Three home runs today, two home runs yesterday. Just lighting the world on fire.
I think he hit four last weekend.
Yeah, so I think he's had, what, eight home runs in the last week?
Yes.
Pretty good week for Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
So we're doing what it takes. He's going to stay in D.C., hopefully win several World Series with us, go into the Hall of Fame as National. Mr. Nat is what we're calling
him.
Kyle Schwarber. My other who's
back. Again, you can't troll
me. I'm not. I'm saying I love Kyle Schwarber.
You're not.
Kyle Schwarber is
great. That was you totally watched every Schwarber at bat.
I watched him today. I have an alert that's set up. Like, remember when they used to cut in to Mark McGuire when he was in the home run chase? When Schwarber's up, it's like, I call him Schwarbombs. And so he's hit a few of those. I'm really enjoying it. And then my other who's back of the week is burner accounts, because Josh Allen allegedly has a burner account.
He was joking.
Was he joking about it?
Definitely.
Are you serious?
Was he kidding about
it? For sure.
Wait.
I read Billy's blog about it.
Oh, my God. All right. Oh, let's keep going, because this is... That was like the biggest joke
I
of
know
all
that
time.
My blog said it was a joke.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I didn't read all of Billy's blog. But I was hoping that Josh Allen would have had a burner account.
No, it was very clear joke.
Okay.
Clickbait move.
Clickbait move on Billy's part.
And you got clickbaited by Billy?
I got clickbaited by Billy. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. my who's back is actually Billy, because I was walking by the kitchen and he was completely seriously telling Hank that he should do a little cycle of HGH. And I just, it just felt good going from last week we were eating 26 Papadias to this week we're back to like having someone just constantly push steroids on us.
Well,
and
yeah, I mean,
like that.
He's my six packs coach, and that was one of his suggestions. I'm open to
anything.
People
are saying you got to do it natural.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously said no to the steroids.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I am open. Good. My ears are open. My ears
what about
are open.
The HGH, though?
That's steroids.
I'm just trying to talk Hank down from doing SARMs because he was raising it, like, actually.
Mm-hmm. SARMs?
Yeah,
I said, should I do SARMs?
What is SARMs?
Someone tweeted at me when we had the conversation. We're like, yo, dude, you should definitely do SARMs. So then I sent to Billy. It was like, should I do SARMs? And to Billy's credit, once again, he had actually written a blog about the dangers of SARMs. So I got all my information from that.
Okay. There we go. He's back.
Right.
He's back. All right, Jake, you're who's back, and then we're going to get to George Kittle and Greg Olson.
Yes. Triple plays are back.
Oh, saw this.
Yeah. The Yankees had a walk-off triple play today. Has to be the first time that's ever happened.
You tell us.
No.
I don't know. You can have a walk-off defensive play.
You tell us.
I know. Yes.
No,
game-winning triple play.
I think it counts. I think it's a walk-off.
It's a game-winning triple play.
Yeah. Boy, you tell us.
Okay, I'll do the research.
It's happened before. Tim Kirkchen would... He was talking about earlier today. I think he said it was 2009, maybe.
What are you doing with the mic here?
I'm trying. We got some technical difficulties. Thank you.
It was sick, though. Triple plays should replace no hitters because they're cooler than no hitters.
I think you should be able to get a run for a triple play.
What do you mean?
On defense, you should be able to score a run.
Yeah.
If you get a triple play.
Yeah. You should also be able to try to get a quadruple play. That's where a run should happen.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep, like, if it's bases loaded.
Try to get everybody out?
Try to get everyone out, even though you don't need to.
Oh, like a pass ball strikeout.
No, that's what it should be, though. It should be if you can get to four outs, then you get a run.
Okay, yeah. You can do a double play.
Yeah, if
on
there's
the last,
a one out, you get a triple play. That should count as a run.
I like that.
Yeah. So you're always just trying to get the extra out.
You should absolutely figure out a way to score on defense. Instead of giving us like six more designated hitters, like I'm sure Manfrotto is going to try to do at some point this year, just give us what the fans want, and that's defensive runs.
So if there's two outs and you get a triple play, that should be two extra runs.
Yep.
That's all baseball.
I'm still looking if it's first.
It's right
ever.
Up there with the free throw idea.
Write that down. Well, no, we know that this one's not legal. The free throw thing...
I knew that wasn't
PFT
legal.
PFT wouldn't listen to us. Jake, you got it?
It's the first time in Yankees history they turned a triple play and won via walk-off.
We're the only team. Yeah, the only team to the Yankees.
27 rings.
This is a complex stat.
Wow.
What?
It's a what stat?
Complex.
Bonk.
Complex?
Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
Yeah. Don't teach you that, Syracuse?
No. All right, I've been bad with pronunciations today.
Yeah, you okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
All set.
All right.
I'll get the answer for you soon.
All right, perfect. All right, let's get to our interview. We got Greg Olson, George Kittle coming up right now. They got Tight End University coming this week. And we're brought to you by our friends at...
Hey, it's PFT here talking about Peloton. Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton encourages you to get moving by doing what you can. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. That's why they have instructors who motivate you from day one with thousands of classes from all levels to get you started.
I love my Peloton. I'm back on the Buns of Anarchy. I've been back on the bike if you want to join Buns of Anarchy.
Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Okay, here they are, Greg Olson and George Kittle. Okay, we now welcome on very special guests. Thanks for that clap there. This sucks because we have Greg Olson and we have George Kittle, but we call George Greg. So like now my brain's already confused. But we have Greg Olson and George Kittle. They have Tight End University coming up this week, so we wanted to get them on because they're both friends, longtime friends of the program. Greg, I wanted to start with you. Can we do the like sentimental stuff at the end, because I don't want to cry at the beginning of the interview.
Son, done.
Okay. All right. But we will do that at the end.
Whenever you want. Your show, bud.
How was your Father's Day?
It was awesome. I spent it watching my other son, my oldest son, play baseball in Charleston.
Okay.
So it was actually pretty awesome.
And a pretty special Father's Day because
Yep.
But we'll do that at the end.
Do we want to do that?
No, we'll do it at the end.
I think we're getting into it.
No, we're going to do it at the end. I want to give the people a tease. All right, so tight end university, who decided that this is what you guys are going to do, and was it like some kind of, hey, tight ends aren't respected enough? I'll start with you, Greg. That was confusing.
Why do you call George Greg?
We just started calling him Greg for it felt like it fit, to be honest. And then right after we started doing
it's a great name.
Everybody else started calling him Greg by accident. It was like I think ESPN wrote an article and then the headline it called you Greg Kittle.
I think what it was, and this is going to be no offense to George, but I think we also were like, George is just not, that's not the name of a dude who's just like throwing people off of him and truck sticking people. That's like a king in England or a bulldog. Like, those are Georges. Greg, just doesn't fit the style that Greg plays.
Well, hey, I will say I do use Greg on my Uber and my Lyfts and like DoorDash. It's Greg Kittle, just so people don't know it's actually me.
Oh, wow. Wow. They'll never
really
figure that out.
In disguise, yeah.
Love that.
All right, so back to the question. Tight end university. Yeah. Tell us how it started and why is Gronk not invited?
Whoa.
He was invited. He was invited. So we'll clear the air on that. We'll get to that in a second. But, I mean, really what happened was back in March when I announced my retirement, George Kittle, he just sent me like a, you know, congrats, man, you know, good career kind of thing. And we just started texting back and forth. We had gotten to know each other over the last couple of years. We have the same marketing agent and, you know, just got to know each other from playing and whatnot. And he's like, hey, if you ever want to come down to Nashville, I got like five or six different tight ends in the league who stay with me and train down here. And I was like, you know, that sounds awesome. You know, I'll try to get down there. And just from kind of texting back and forth, we kind of thought maybe there'd be something bigger involved. And we said, let's get Kelsey involved. And he immediately said yes. So the three of us kind of jumped on a call, and a handful of conversations later, we got over 50 NFL tight ends coming down to Nashville. The George is kind of hosting us down there at some facilities he has access to. And it really just started organically from just a random text conversation after I retired.
So you invited Gronk, and you also invited Tebow. Is Tebow there with you right now?
So I'm going to let George take this one.
So nothing against Tim Tebow, but I found it hard to invite. I wish nothing but the best for Tim Tebow, and I hope he has a fantastic season playing tight end. But it's hard for me to not invite like a backup tight end on, let's say, the New York Giants, as opposed to inviting a guy that just started playing tight end position. Because the thing is, we do have limited spots. I wish I could make it a brand. Every NFL tight end could come. It's accessible to everybody. But like what we tried to do this year is we wanted like to pay for everything for all the tight ends to come, to kind of make it a special like event for all tight ends. And so like we booked up an entire hotel. Like they're completely out of rooms. We have every room taken, or all the block. Like we blocked off a certain amount of rooms. We're completely out of rooms. And so like we thought we're going to get like 20 guys. And next thing I know, we have 47 confirmed, like as of last week. And I think we just got past 50. But it's just like, wow, like that's a lot of guys that we weren't, you know, like we kind of expected guys to want to jump in, but it just kind of happened like that. And so hopefully in the next years to come, we can make it like open and available to everybody.
Just like a quick headline grab, would you like to extend an invitation to Tim Tebow for next year's camp?
Yes. If he's on a roster this year and he plays tight end, we would love to have him. We would love to work with him. Once he's officially a tight end, we would love to work with him.
Okay, so here's a follow-up question.
Headline.
Here's a follow-up question. And Greg, I like, no offense to Tim Tebow. He does get people talking. But from your perspective, you played in the NFL for over a decade, tight end, Pro Bowls, everything. What's the thing that, like, Tebow or the casual fan doesn't realize about playing the tight end position that like he's not going to be able to pick up overnight? Because he's a crazy athlete, right? Great athlete, played, you know, minor league baseball, Heisman Trophy, all these things. But what's the thing that it doesn't matter if he is great at everything else, but the one thing, it's like you're not going to be able to learn this in one mini camp. This takes years and years of practice.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be unique to necessarily Tebow, right? I think here's what used to piss me off as a tight end in the NFL, and maybe George feels the same way, but like there's one position in the NFL that gets all the, I never played the position or even played the sport of football before, right? I played rugby, I played basketball. I played Australian rules football. I played, right? Like, there's all these guys that never played tight end, let alone football. And then when they want to make the transition to trying in the NFL, you're like, yeah, let's just make that guy a tight end. And I always used to take offense to that, you know, like every mini camp, every training camp, we'd have like random guys on our team who never played football. And I was like, why did the point guard who never made it from Auburn, like, why did he never be made a safety? Why was it just like the power forward? Like, that used to piss me off. And I'd be like, you guys have no idea how hard this shit is. Like, you guys have not a clue. So, like, this isn't unique to Tebow. I just think everybody thinks when their original position or sport comes to an end, like, oh, fuck it, I'll just go play tight end. And I'm like, fuck, what? Like,
it actually seems like maybe the hardest position to pick up.
Because you're going to do so much. Yeah, so yeah. What is the quarterback? Yeah, what's the skill set that, like, would you say is the hardest for a tight end? What's the part of the game that is most difficult to perfect for a tight end?
I mean, I think it's the fact that you have to be good at everything. Like, you can't just – like, you can be an elite route runner. You can catch the ball really well. You can run really well. But then if you can't, like, hold your own in the run game and you can't, like, take in hit in the face by a 300-pound defensive end, then, like, you kind of have – they kind of have to, like, call plays around you instead of, like, you being able to be the focal point. But, like, you have to be very good at pass pro, running routes, setting the edge, being able to crack on a safety, being able to sift block a defensive end. You have to be in the backfield for protection like a running back. But, like, you just kind of do everything. And then it's just if you can do all of those things at a high level.
So you guys have tight end you, and we always love the debate. Whenever it comes up in, like, college football, there was a debate last year of what DBU is. Is it LSU or is it Texas? What would you say is the actual tight end you? Is it Iowa?
Yeah, it's Iowa. Dude, like, I got Dallas Clark on my shirt right now for a reason, baby. That's tight.
I ran into Dallas Clark at a concert a couple of years ago.
Did you? It's Iowa, though.
I mean, come on.
I mean,
you're awesome. Dallas was awesome.
I got Hockenson. I got Fant in the first round. Never before done.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
So within like last 10 years.
Are we saying like NFL career, like accomplishments? Like, what are we basing? Because, I mean, if you want to talk, I mean, Miami went 5 years in a row, five tight ends in a row who were drafted in the first round. And like the only guy who wasn't was drafted in the second round.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. When was that? That was pretty recent, right?
Well, going back to Miami lineage, right? You have Bubba Franks first round, Shockey first round, Kellen Winslow first round, Kevin Everett second round, me first round. Since then we've had Jimmy Graham, one of the most prolific guys of all time. David Njoku was a first round pick, career still kind of developing, but he's coming to the camp like super uber talented, kind of building his career up in Cleveland. I mean, we've had dudes now. I mean,
okay. I like your counterpoint. Here's a counter to your counterpoint. Maybe don't say Kellen Winslow when you do the list.
Yeah, it's always uncomfortable. That's always a tough one.
You had me with Bubba Franks, all-time football guy name.
No, we're like Peter King. Yeah. Strictly on the field.
On the field only.
Is the only thing that we'll discuss here.
The Kellen one is that's tough.
Well, no,
that's
you were talking about his dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kellen Winslow Sr.
Yeah, yes. that's who we meant.
Yes.
Exactly.
Is Mike Martz going to get invited to this tight end university?
No. I tried texting him. He didn't get back to me. He said he said he only has time for wideouts.
Yeah. He would just show up and be like, I can't use any of these guys. What the fuck?
So one thing I will say, yeah, fuck, it's unbelievable. It's fucking crazy. So one thing I used to say until Kittle and Kelsey got their new contracts – you're a humble brag for you. The joke used to be, like, back to what made tight end hard, like the joke used to be, like, you have to block the same guy as the tackle, run routes and win versus the same guy as the wide receiver, and they pay you half. Like, other than Kelsey and Kittle, that applied to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But that was always like the running joke, like we have to do the same shit that $15 million left tackle has to do and run routes against the same guy the $15 million wide receiver has to run routes against. And they're going to pay us $7 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
And George, leading up to the draft, we were talking
about some of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were talking about how sick it would have been if you guys had gotten Kyle Pitts, not to replace you, but just to see the kind of weird shit that Kyle Shanahan would come up with having two awesome tight ends. Did that thought occur to you? Were you like, you know what? We would be pretty fun to watch.
I mean, I'm excited. Like, I'm a Kyle Pitts fan. Just watched him last year. Like, the dude just scores touchdowns. Like, it's nothing. It's crazy. Like, he just always scores two touchdowns a game. And I think just his athletic ability and then his ability just on a football field, he's going to be very talented in Atlanta. I wanted him to go, like, first overall, like, to be, like, the first tight end to ever go first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get it, but I would have drafted him first.
Yeah, and then right after that, I think, was when Kyle said, like, I don't know if Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be alive at the draft, so we can't make any guarantees.
That was an all-time coaching line.
It was awesome. Has he ever threatened to kill you?
Kyle?
Yeah.
No, he's very in the moment. So, like, you ask him, like, hey, are you good to go Sunday? Like, now I can say back to him, like, I don't know if I'm going to be alive Sunday, coach. Yeah. Like, you know, game day, man.
We're all questionable.
That was amazing.
How weird was it, though, that, like, the offseason with, you know, the 49ers doing all the trading up and down the draft, and then everyone's decided who they're going to take, then they don't take the guy they're going to take? I would imagine it's been a little awkward talking with Jimmy, because I know you're friends with him. Or does he have a good attitude, like, hey, I'm going to just keep playing and hope, you know, things work out?
I think it's more of a – I mean, the great thing about football is like, when you're given the opportunity, like, it's your job to lose it. So, like, I mean, like, we brought in tight ends, like, the last 3 years for me, and, like, the guys that I play with in my room are awesome. Like, they're all good football players, but, like, I'm a starter, and, like, it's my opportunity to make plays, so I continue to be the starter. And that's one thing about Jimmy. Like, that dude had a fantastic OTAs, and he was slinging the ball. Offense was clicking. And, like, he's just taking advantage of the opportunity. Like, Jimmy had a great OTAs. He, like I said, he looked great. And Trey Lance has an opportunity to be a really good quarterback. So I think it's just going to be a really good competitive battle. And, you know, Jimmy's, you know, he's ready to roll. And it's exciting to see that fire in him.
One thing I love about your tattoos and the evolution is we get to look back at, like, all the pictures of you when you're playing, and we can pretty much pinpoint exactly what year it was based on the picture of your arm. Have you gotten – I know you got – was it the Halo guy? You got Master Chief on there. Have you added to it?
I just got Godzilla yesterday.
Hell yeah. Whoa.
The best part, awesome. Hey, hold on. So the other day we're texting about coming on this show, guys. And the response from George when I said, well, shoot, you know, what about this weekend? Like any other, he goes, well, Saturday I'm flying to Miami and I'm going to spend 8 hours getting a tattoo. And I was like, all right, I guess Saturday is out.
Wait, fast.
They don't have tattoo. Like, yeah. They don't have tattoo places in Nashville.
No, it's just, I had a tattooer. Like, I get a couple tattoo artists in my DMs every once in a while. They're just like, hey, I'd love to, like, add to your artwork. And I was like, I looked at some of his stuff and I was like, this is really, really sick. And I just like I said, I like some of his stuff. And he did like a guy with a tiger face right here. And I was like, that's cool, but can you do Godzilla? And he was like, yeah, I can do that. So I flew down and I got tatted in Miami.
All right. Sick. I got a question for you then. I'm 36 years old, father of two. Yeah. I always wish I had a tattoo. Is it too late for me? I think it is.
My dad's 62 and he's about to finish his full left forearm sleeve.
Really? So how long of his life before he got his first tattoo?
My dad, he had a butterfly on his thigh when he was in college.
Okay.
For the white buffalo hunter. And then he didn't get another tattoo until I think I had graduated high school.
So you would see him and you'd be like, that's not a tattoo guy. And then all of a sudden one day he just became a tattoo guy.
Well, my dad was a pastor for a while too. Like, pastors don't really get tatted up all the time. But he was a lawyer for a while, and then when he became a football coach again at OU back in like 2010, whenever that was, he started opening it up, and like he has a Rise Against tattoo, like the band, the whole logo on that. He's got a whale shark on his arm. He's about to do like some type of tribal water tattoo on his rest of his forearm. So he's ready to roll.
So I can do it. Yeah, maybe I got to become a football coach.
What's a good starter tattoo for somebody in their mid 30s? Maybe a single teardrop.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe like, you know, get something like, you know, connected to, like, I don't know, like your son's birthday. Yeah, that, look okay, at you.
Nice.
Like,
there okay. you go.
Yeah.
Like,
that's good.
Yeah, maybe start with that. Something that, like, people can't make fun of.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
We're gonna. I have one of those too.
A what tat?
An ass tat.
You do? Let me see it.
Of what?
No. It's my college address for my freshman year.
I kind of want to see it. I kind of want to see it.
We'll blur it out.
In Tennessee on Wednesday night, and I'll show you then.
Wait, no, you got
to
show it.
Seriously, I need you to show me your ass when we get there. First thing.
No, show it right now. You know that this is like, you can't, if you guys are doing promo on like Bleacher Reporter, you know, Florio show, like you can't do this. So you could do it here. Show us your ass.
No, the no,
seriously, show us your ass.
Show us your ass.
No.
Show us your ass.
I'll show you my ass.
We'll show our asses here.
No, that's different.
What? That was the corner of my ass.
I don't
boom,
have a TV.
There's a lot of PFT's ass. He went full crack.
Hey, I only went a little.
We're all showing asses here.
The best part of PFT's ass shot right there was his microphone. It was perfectly in his ass crack. So you don't even need to blurry it. It's like, it was like he did it on purpose. It
smells funny now. Hank would do it, but he doesn't have an ass.
Yeah, come on. Oh, damn. That was mean. Wait, show us your ass. Go ahead. Go ahead, George.
Show us your ass.
I'll come whenever you guys come down for Grit Week.
No,
I'll show
you know what? I'm going on strike in this episode. I'm not going to say another word until I see George Kittle's ass.
Just show us a peek, sponsors, a little peek.
Hey,
yeah.
Our sponsors need to see your ass. Yeah. The sponsors of TU need to see your ass.
Influence on. My wife's looking at me through the window right now, and I'm going to pull out my ass.
She knows. Listen.
She's seen it.
I like Greg, retired Greg. Oh, there it is. Oh, okay, that's nothing.
That's upper ass.
830 Miller?
Yeah, that's good.
That's like lower back.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Eight thirty Miller.
We saw a lot more of.
Both of our asses.
Four of us.
Yeah.
Great. I have nothing to show on my ass. I have no tattoos. None.
How do we feel about the new numbers in the NFL, where you got wide receivers that are going to be rocking single digits now, and tight ends are still stuck with 40s and 80s?
Numbers.
Say it again. Guys,
we just went from ass tats to single digit numbers.
Yeah. Yep. You got range, baby.
In the biz, it's called the transition.
It's a segue.
It is. I mean, it is what it is. I think it'll be kind of cool. I know Tom Brady was mad about it, just be for like the defensive guys. And I will say, like, the numbers on some like defensive players is kind of odd. Like when a safety is wearing a linebacker's number, like just something weird like that. But I mean, I think the game will evolve. Get used to it.
If you were to change your number, if there was like any number, like let's pretend like the rule book did not exist, what number would you want to wear?
11.
That would look really fast. I feel like, dude, it might be my dumb brain, but I feel like you would lose some blocking ability if you got number 11.
No, you wouldn't be able to shed as many guys.
Remember LeVar Arrington? Wasn't he number 11?
Yeah, there's a couple college guys.
Was he number 11, or I messed that up?
He was 56 in the NFL. I don't know.
At Penn State.
At Penn State, he was 11, yes. At Penn State, he was 11.
Yeah. He was 11. Unbelievable. With that neck roll, number, dude, you would be unbelievable. You know how lean you would look? You know how they say like long, skinny numbers make everyone look lean?
Yep.
Dude, you would look unbelievable in number. I would be number 4. That was my high school number. That's where it all started.
Big neck roll,
gigantic face mask, number 4.
Going to get back to Greg's in a second. Before we do.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now more Greg's.
Hey, speaking of where it all started, Greg, are you ready to do a documentary on the 7th Floor Crew?
It's funny you say that.
Yeah, you know. Well, I know. It was you funny. Know that I know.
It's funny you say that. There may be a time that we can dive into. So here's my take on that whole thing.
Yes,
I haven't really talked much about it, but that story obviously got a lot of publicity at the time and then after I had gotten drafted, it kind of got kicked up again after the draft, and then it got kicked up again when they did the 30 for 30 with the U. And my whole thing is, no one's ever told like what's really happened. Like, how did it come to be? Like, we're made out to seem like a bunch of guys were sitting around just coming up with like the most asinine things ever, which is kind of true. But like, there was some sort of like rhyme to the reason of how the whole thing like organically became. And it was never intended on being shared outside of the handful of guys that were involved. So it took on a completely unintended life of its own. But no one ever told the story of like who did it, how it was done, where it was filmed, because I think that's the part of the story that people would be really interested in and know that like the guys who were involved are like normal guys for the most part. But no one's ever like told that side. They've told like the glamour, like party pregame, playing it in bars, you know, that side.
Yes.
Have you considered doing a sequel to it?
Ooh.
No. I have a daughter now, and I pray to God she never learns how to use Google.
So when
I don't think that's going to happen.
When you're on the road, like when you're at TEU coming up this week. Do you make a request like, hey, just don't put me on the seventh floor in the hotel?
No, but I'll be honest with you. Like the handfuls, you know, the time just by sheer probabilities, you get that, and like you get your room key at a hotel, and like you hit the button, and like in your mind, you kind of chuckle. Anytime you hear somebody say like, "Hey, what floor are we on?" Oh, we're on the seventh floor. Like in my mind, I'm like, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Do you feel like you don't get enough respect for your ability as a rapper? Like your flow was kind of overshadowed by the content of the rap.
It was, and that's my one regret, is I wish the content would have been better, that it could have been appreciated more. It was bad, like looking back, not a great decision in the moment, but you would be shocked. So the last few years of playing, you know, being the oldest guy on the team for the last couple of years, wherever I was, the amount of kids that would be like, come up to me, like they would build up their nerves to come up and say, and they'd be like, "Hey dude, I was in high school, or I was a freshman in high school when I first heard that song in my football locker room. And like, now that I'm playing with you is the coolest thing." Like, that's what they remember. And I was like, I'm not sure if that's cool or not. Uh-huh. Like I've done some other shit, you know, but they all remember, you know, they all remember they're like, "We used to pregame to that in my college dorm before we would go out at night." And I'm like, I know.
Did any of like the rookies ever come up to you and be like, "Hey Greg, like are your lyrics true?"
Yes.
Yes. Hey, is that true? All right, we'll flip it back to you, George. So wait, is there a charity aspect of the tight end?
There is.
I'm glad you asked.
Because it just dawned on me that George, you just invited a bunch of dudes to come and drink at your house in Nashville.
Well, no, kind of, but. Instead, so like that's why we got involved with sponsors, so we can, you know, pay for guys to like stay here, take care of them. We also raise a ton of money to give to local charities in Nashville, which has been really fun. You know, we've been able to work with Levi's. Bud Light's been huge for us. Like, they're giving us free Bud Light for all the events.
Tell them what you're doing after.
We'll bleep out that, by the way. We're a Coors podcast now.
Mountains are
blue. Thank you very much.
Bud Light Seltzer, all that good stuff. But we have Bridgestone's coming in to bring the Boys and Girls Club in, and we're gonna like just play some go through some drills with them.
Body armor.
Love
you
that.
Can say that we're body armor body guys. Armor. Yep, you can say that.
So they were Bud the Light. First sponsors. So when we were kicking it around, to George's point, we were kicking it around, and as the numbers started growing, we're like, all right, we got to bring in 50 guys, put them up in a hotel, feed them, transportation. You know, me and George and Kelsey are nice guys, and we've made a good coin, but you know, that shit's expensive. You know, you start bringing in guys and they want to bring their wives to dinner, and things added up. So we reached out to a handful. George mentioned all those guys. Body Armor was the first, you know, the first group that said, you know, we're all in, and they've been awesome. And, you know, outfitting guys with, you know, the drinks and the gear and the equipment and, you know, all those. And then the point that the way the whole thing came together was super cool, is after we pay for all the expenses, thanks for partners like them, all the remaining money, we partnered with the Nashville Boys and Girls Club. They're going to come out and do a little camp, and we're going to make a contribution to them. You know, so we're going to have, you know, all this leftover money. George and I and Kelsey, we make no money from this. All the remaining money that doesn't go towards giving the guys a great experience for the 3 days, all is being given away to charity, both locally in Nashville and also throughout the country. So we couldn't, you know, without those sponsors, you know, especially, you know, with Bud Light, sorry.
No, nope.
You know, Body Armor. Sorry, mm-hmm. Body Armor, Levi's, and Bridgestone. Like all those Muggsy. Groups coming together to understand like what we're trying to build here. A lot of other people are going to benefit as a result.
Yeah, that's sick. And the kid aspect of like kids coming out, and maybe this will be like a little foreplay to the real sappy stuff we're about to do. But kids coming out and like playing football with a bunch of pros, you can never get enough of that. Have you guys had a moment yet? Maybe not you, George, but Greg, I'm sure you've had it. Where have you had a moment where you were maybe at a camp with a kid, and then that kid like ended up being in the NFL or maybe playing college football, and like you were able to be like get back connected with him? Like, holy shit! Like, you know, you had an impact on my life.
Like on social media, I've had people send me like a picture and say, "Hey, I met you at the Gatorade camp in 2008 when I was a sophomore in high school or a middle school kid, and you know, I just got a scholarship to, you know, wherever. You know, I'm going to play football next year at Iowa." Like, I've had, you know, those kind of stories that are just, you know, awesome. And you know, I don't remember meeting him, but DK Metcalf, I played with his father in Chicago, and he says we met in the locker room one time, which I'm sure we did. And then last year, me and him were teammates, you know? So like those kind of stories are awesome, both for people that you know, and also just people that along the way you kind of rub shoulders with. But, you know, George being so tied in down in Nashville and having great connections with them, we're going to have 50 or 75 or so kids come out on Thursday. And in the afternoon, we're going to do like an hour long. All the tight ends will be out there. We're going to set up drills and do like a fun, free clinic for all those kids to come on out. And we're going to take like an hour pause from our itinerary of Tight End U to kind of spend the afternoon with those kids before we get back into the classroom sessions and the video prep and all that stuff that we're going to do with the group. So it's going to be super cool.
So how does that work when you're going to be kind of teaching some of your competitors? Like, I know for you, George, like you're going to be playing against these guys this year, and probably you too, Greg, because you always do that thing where like three quarters of the way through the year, people are like, oh, I bet Greg Olson could come back and make a roster. So you might be out there again next year. Like, is there any sort of like competitive instinct that takes over where you're like, I want to teach this guy, but maybe not teach him everything that I know?
No, I mean, dude, when one tight end succeeds, like when we're all succeeding, then everyone gets to benefit off of each other, you know, whether that's from guys playing well and getting contracts so the tight end position gets paid more and more. I mean, like a big part of that, tight ends have been making under $10 million forever. And like, we just kind of broke through that. But we're still, like Greg said, like we're still getting paid less than a lot of the, you know, other positions. And I mean, I feel like the tight end does a lot. I mean, if you look at the last 10 Super Bowls, I think every team that's won is at a dominant, like a very, very talented tight end. Yep. So like it has to do with winning Super Bowls. So, I mean, I think that's the most important thing. So you might as well pay the tight ends. And, you know, I just kind of want that number to keep going up. But like I said, like when tight ends come together, you can learn. And, you know, I mean, what's more important than like Kyle Pitts is like a rookie. Like I said, he's going to be really good, but the NFL is faster than college. And if he can sit in a room for 2 days and learn from guys like Greg Olson, me, Travis Kelce, Mercedes Lewis, Luke Stocker, like you got vets in there and you can learn a thing or two. I mean, like it's just going to, I mean, take guys' career and hopefully like just on an uphill trajectory all the time doing that. It's all good.
Are you going to teach a class, George, where it's like this is just how you be a beast and throw people off of you? And then just play that clip of the Saints clip where you just had like four Saints on you in the dome and you were just tossing them everywhere?
I'm going to talk about yak, you know, yards after catch. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to talk about run blocking and pass pro. Those are my three topics.
Okay.
What about, do you do like a breakdown where it's just block day is one specific day of the week? Like, hey, we're just going to basically focus on the part of our game that's just throwing people out of the club today.
That's, I mean, like I said, that's my, like, I got a 30-minute session on Friday. It's all dedicated to run blocking and pass pro.
I'm going to throw this out there. Next year, we should be invited, and we should give a class on how tight ends, like, you know, be the most charismatic guys on your teams, do interviews with Part of My Take, and hopefully that will help, you know, raise your star and maybe get you a couple dollars more.
I mean, I'm in for that.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll just be called How to Get on Part of My Take, and then you just have to write your phone number down and hand it to us, and then you can leave.
And then just say something super, super, like, is something that we can put on a headline, and we're good to go.
Yeah, wear a Part of My Take shirt on Hard Knocks. Is Luke Wilson going to be there?
Uh-oh.
I invited him.
Did you? Mm. Not the actor.
No. Luke Wilson with two L's.
Yeah, okay, good. Whew.
Yeah, I was his team. We played together last year in Seattle. I invited him. Hopefully
and?
He comes. I think he's, like, locked in Canada, right?
Yeah.
The borders and shit are shut down.
That's true.
Damn it.
We would probably waive our no former tight end experience waiver clause if you guys wanted to come down next year. Pack your cleats, get in shape, put you through camp, and we'll see if you guys can do it.
No. I wanted to show up and do like a 30-minute Zoom and get paid to go to Nashville. I didn't want to do – or PowerPoint, sorry.
We can do that.
I didn't want to do any athletic stuff. Maybe you know, one of the kids we can point out to one of the kids and be like, all right, you're a podcaster. You're not a tight end. Like, just let's cut to the chase here. You're a blogger.
We're scouting.
You're not a tight end. Like, we're just going to be nice to you, you know.
That'd be amazing.
We forgot to talk about Charmin is also one of our sponsors, and they're sending down two life-size bears.
Really?
For Thursday. Yes. And they're going to throw toilet paper at people.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's good. That's good. Really? Yeah.
Dude, we're killing it. Tight End U is going to be annual tradition.
Did you guys invite Blake Bortles?
Blake of the year?
He's got good hands.
Yeah. I mean, people say that he would be an awesome tight end.
including himself.
He does have good hands.
Okay. All right.
I did not invite
Think
him.
About that. All right, let's finish with this. Greg, I do actually want to talk to you about this because it was a story that a lot of people, you know, saw online. It was very emotional. Your son, TJ, just got a heart transplant. I basically, every time the videos came up, I had to not watch it because it made me so emotional. Obviously, it's been crazy time last few months, you know, for your family. How is he doing? And what has, this is a terrible question, but like, what has it been like? I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been wild. So, I mean, since the day he was born, you know, we knew prior to him being born that he was going to be born with a long road to hoe. He was in essence born with only half of a heart. So he literally only had one right ventricle. If left untreated, you know, you die. So he had three open heart surgeries before his second birthday. And in essence, he lived with half of a heart, which is kind of like our play on why we wear these shirts a lot. And he lived with what they call a single ventricle. He had one chamber of his heart and he lived his life like that. And he was doing really well, lived a fairly standard quality of life for the most part, had some restrictions. And then about a little over a month ago, my wife and I just noticed he wasn't himself. He was getting really bogged down. We thought maybe he was just tired. So after a few days, we took him into the hospital, and within hours, he was admitted into the ICU in heart failure. And they said his heart just was no longer able to keep up. It was failing, and there was no reversing it. And we began, at that day, we began the process of getting him listed to be a heart transplant recipient. So he was 8 years old. He's still 8 years old. And we started that process. He was listed, and we didn't know how long that process was going to take. We were in the ICU for the entire duration of waiting for the heart. And a big reason we share those videos and fortunate to be able to talk about it, you know, on a platform like this is because there's so many people out there who have these stories, right? And they're sitting in their hospital room and they're by themselves and they're alone and they feel like they're the only one in the world doing this. And we just want to shine a little light that, like, you don't only have to share your great moments, right? Like, you don't only have to share when you're throwing a cool tight end thing with George Kittle and you're having a blast talking shit with you guys. Like, all of us have lives that at times suck, right? Like, shit happens. And this was one of them. So we hunkered down, not knowing how long the process would be. By the grace of God and him being in certain criteria of size and blood type and antibody rejections and liver fail, like all these billion factors that go into this algorithm of qualifying you, we were notified that he would be, after about a little over about 10 days, we were notified that there was a heart match. And on June 4th, TJ underwent an open heart surgery, and he came home on Wednesday. Wow. And he's been home now for the weekend. And I mean, we could have a 2-hour talk on just what that process entails, but it's remarkable what he's been through and what these doctors can do. I mean, they literally cut his chest open. They took his heart out and they flew in on a private jet, another heart in a cooler, literally in a cooler of ice, reconnect it and start it back up.
That's unreal. Incredible. I mean,
it's wild.
Yeah. And it's, you know, anyone who's got kids, like I said, I tried to watch the video, and I think you don't really understand it until you have a kid of your own. And you're like, you know, you do anything, literally anything, and like to go through that. Fuck, man, I'm just so happy he's good. And what's like, is he gonna live a somewhat normal life now with his new heart?
They said his immediate life right now, once he recovers, it's about a year process until he's about like done. He's on like serious immunosuppressants so that the body doesn't reject the heart. So, like, there's no like going out and about. It's almost like he has to live in COVID for like another year, which is kind of weird that we actually know what that, you know how to live with him for the time being. But it's about a year process until he can like venture back out into school settings and big groups and, you know, acclimate himself back out into life. But you know, the one downside to getting a heart transplant at such a young age, and typically why they try to prolong having to get it, is the hearts don't last forever. Right now, hearts last like give or take 20 years. So when you're 8, it takes you to 28. As the medicine stands today, you know, and you got to do it again. So that's where things get a little dicey. But, you know, every year, their ability to push off rejection, keep your body, you know, in coordination with your heart and, you know, keeping things working gets better and better and better. So we try not to think of that we have to do this again in 20 years. We hope that it's 50 years, whatever it is. And we just are thankful for every day that he's home. You know, like the little, just he's home. Right. And we have him and we're going to love it every day that we have him. And, you know, the hardest, I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you guys. The hardest part to rationalize is like the mix, the dual emotions of getting the call that your son's life's going to be saved. Cause without this heart, he's not going to be able to live. He's, you know, he was on medicine. That was the only reason his heart pumped, you know, hooked up. He would wear like a backpack and it was all around the clock. And that was what would let his failing heart work. Right. But the reality is right now in our stage of medicine, someone else has to have a tragedy to allow them to be able to donate a heart. And it's not just someone who dies. They have to die like in certain ways to make their organs ability to be donated. And it's just a really, really hard, right? You know, at the moment you're having a sense of relief that your day has here at that very moment in time, someone else somewhere in the country is having like their worst day ever. Yeah. Right. But, it's so hard.
Yeah. But it also is a good reminder that if you're not an organ donor, you know, you should, you should be an organ donor. Absolutely. Everyone out there, like it's a really, really important thing. And it's not, you know, I think there used to be a time when everyone's like, well, they're going to harvest my organs. No, that's not how it works. If something tragically happened to you, you could save someone else's life. And that's like, you get a story like this with TJ and it's the best, man. It's unreal.
And how about this? We don't know anything about our organ donor. They're not allowed to share any personal information. We don't know the age, the gender, the location, but they donated 7 organs. Wow. So 7 families, you know, you start talking, you know, eyes and, or, you know, liver and pancreas and kidneys and heart and lungs, you know, 7 lives. So 6 other families like us have their, you know, hypothetically, hopefully everything went well, have their son, daughter, husband, whatever, because of one person.
It's a super easy step that everyone can take. Just when you're at the DMV, you just check a box, that's all that it takes. You can be, you know, a world of difference, like you said, for 7 different families. That's incredible. How is he doing, like, mentally? Are his spirits up? I imagine that for an 8-year-old, this has got to be, you know, an extremely scary thing. Scary doesn't even really begin to describe it. But how has he handled this? And are his spirits good?
His spirits are awesome. I wish I could show you guys. Like, my wife sent me a picture. I had to take my other, so I brought him home from the hospital Wednesday after being there for a month, brought him home Wednesday, and Thursday had to take my other son to a baseball tournament for the last 3 days in Charleston, South Carolina. So my wife and our parents and all them stayed here with them to take care. And she sent me a video of him like jogging down our driveway, like back to our house. You know, it's just, it's mind blowing with how resilient these kids are. I mean, if it was any one of us, we'd be just like pity party, negative, your world sucks. And he hasn't had a bad day. You know, he had like one moment of weakness. The morning we woke him up to take him to surgery, like the day, right? He just broke down and he's like, I don't want a new heart, Dad. I don't want a new heart, Mom. And we're like, that's, you know, make they see him say that, right? Is tough. The day before he's playing air hockey, right? And he said, but you know, but you don't have much of a vote, bud. You have no choice, right? So he's been unbelievable. He's home. He's happy. He wants to go for pizza. He wants to go watch his brother's baseball team practice. You know, we're like, all right, bud. Well, we got time. We'll get there. But he's for everything that he's been through, he's doing awesome.
It is true. Kids are so fucking resilient. I mean, I would sprain my ankle and I'd hand someone my license and be like, go ahead, I'm an organ donor, take it all. I'm happy we did this at the end, though, because I wouldn't have been able to handle the rest. So let's end with this. George, we're taping this on Father's Day. Did you write your dad a 20-page letter for Father's Day like he writes to you?
No, I took him to Miami and I put him on a beach and he swam in the ocean all day.
For 8 hours while you got your tattoo?
No, he came with me to the tattoo and he just sat there the whole time he was doing the tight end new agenda, getting the schedule set out. Like, shout out my dad for being like, he's the G. Him and our marketing guys have gotten the whole thing done. But yeah,
Rubicon,
no, I think,
Rubicon Town, they should get a shout out.
Yeah,
Rubicon,
shout out Coors Light,
Peter Raskin, Peter Kaskin.
That's our guy. But I just put him on each of my for the last 3 days.
Okay,
been awesome.
All right, so that's good, son. Now he should part of tight end U, and I don't want to tell you guys how to do it. But it would be great if your dad wrote a specialized letter to every single tight end on their way out the door.
Utilize, like, for each individual person gets their own.
Yes.
From, it has to happen.
Yes.
If I don't get one, I'm not doing it next year.
Yeah. Be like, right. Listen, I've only
he
known you
even
for.
Know me.
Yeah, I've only known you for 3 days, but I love you like a son, and I really want to see you see, like, do the whole thing. Remember that time on Tuesday when we first met?
I felt a connection.
Yeah. Are you should be in charge of giving out the awards. Are you guys doing awards at the end of camp?
No, I don't think we are, but that's a good idea for next year.
Yeah, little like awards. T-ball trophy awards would be funny for a bunch of like professional tight ends.
Oh, no, here's what you do. You give everybody a participation trophy, and you see who throws them away.
Yeah.
And the people that don't throw them away, they lose the camp.
They get cut.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. That's actually – I hope you can edit that out of this so when we – so we don't spoil the surprise, because I think we should actually do that.
Yeah. And Greg, are we going to be seeing you on TV this year?
You are. I'm going to be calling George's games. I'm going to be giving him so much love. It's going to be crazy.
I love it.
I'm going to be calling games with Fox, and I am not going to be coming out of retirement. I am completely and utterly done. I've set a record for how many times I've broken and ruptured my feet. So I'm full-time dad and part-time broadcaster.
Okay. Be nice to the Bears, because I know you're going to get some Bears games.
No, I like the Bears. I once that regime left, like I'll be honest, when I left, like, I wanted them to lose every game, obviously. But then, like, once they all moved on and they went to, like, the Tressman and all these guys, I actually thought the Bears – I'm not going to lie, I was pissed at the Bears. You want to hear a Bears story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll
finish with this last story. So last year – I got cut. I was going into free agency after the Super Bowl, after the Panthers cut me, and was talking to a bunch of different teams, trying to figure out, you know, what the opportunities were and, you know, whatnot. And I talked to Matt Nagy, called me with the GM, and we talked for like 45 minutes on the phone. And, you know, they're asking me questions about routes and what kind of systems have you played in? Would you be comfortable with, you know, code words versus digits? What did you do on your backside routes? What was your leverage reads? How did, you know, all this stuff. So I hang up. I'm like, I said to my wife, I'm like, babe, I think they really like me and want to sign me. How cool would it be if, like, life came full circle and we could finish up my career back in Chicago? That would be so sick, right? So I got myself, like, all excited. Long story short, they were like, we don't have enough money. We don't have this. So I go and sign in Seattle. Day one of fucking free agency, they signed Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
I said, what the fuck?
Well,
and
they also
they paid him more than they were gonna I wanted.
They also I think Ryan Pace was just, there was a time there where the Bears had like 11 tight ends, so if there was any tight end, he was like, I just want to talk to him. Like, I want to get on the phone with this guy.
So I literally said to my wife, they and again, I love Jimmy, don't get me wrong, it has nothing to do with Jimmy. I was like, when they signed Jimmy, I was like, those guys. It was like they used me. It was like they took me on like a really cheap date, picked my brain for everything I knew, and then they just like gave me an Uber and like sent me my way.
Not surprised. Not surprised. All right. Anyway. Everyone, Greg and George, thank you so much. Tight End U is happening this week. Going to be great for charity for the kids. It's also going to be great for all the tight ends. We'll be there next year, guaranteed. And thank you, guys. We really appreciate it.
Mm. Thank you, boys.
Appreciate you guys. You guys are awesome. Thanks, guys.
Good to see you guys. The Gregs are brought to you by...
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Cheese's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Cheese.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
Okay, what do you got, Jake?
First game-ending triple play since the Phillies turned one against the Mets on August 23rd, 2009. This was the 27th game-ending triple play. So it was far from correct.
Not even close.
Not even close.
I'm only seeing nine, Jake. Nine game-ending triple plays.
Wow.
There's one, Chris Sabo, Rex Specs King, Chris Sabo, 91.
Yeah, I see 27 via Sarah Lang's.
Is it Mike Francesa a bit?
All right.
Keep going. I want you to keep going, PFT.
Well, there was one back in 1978, Ron Say. He was batting Ken Forster, the pitcher. It was the Dodgers and the Astros, back when the Astros were in the National League at that point. And then before that, you got the Kansas City Royals and the Baltimore Orioles. Old Tippy Martinez was on the bump going up against John Waith in 1977. They were down 7-5, walk-off triple play there. Then we got Phil Gagliano. With the St. Louis Cardinals at the Cincinnati Reds. Don Notbart was the pitcher. Oh, and then you got to take it way back to 1966. Guess who was pitching that one, Big Cat?
Sandy Koufax.
Little
Oil Cam Boyd.
Nope. A little pitcher known by Tommy John.
Yeah,
Tommy John was twirling a gym.
Recurring guest? Oh, not recurring guest.
No. Tommy John, recurring guest?
Dr. James Andrew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who fixed Kyle Schwarber's knee?
Yep.
Full circle.
Shout out.
All right. Monday reading.
Yeah, so this is a little different. Not really a funny Monday reading. A little bit sadder, but we do like talk about our lives on our show. This is going on with me. So this was a text that I sent to PFT and Big Cat earlier. It said, I'm talking to Dave today. Rhea already texted him and told him. So if it's cool with you guys at the very end of the show, I'll mention what's going on with us, that we're broken up, etc., and that we're cool. Moving on to separate apartments and moving on for now. Obviously super sad, but probably better long term.
It's tough.
So, yeah.
So you and Rhea are...
We're broken up.
Broken up.
Yeah, so it's been going on for like... I mean, we've been kind of separated for like a month. It happened over COVID. We just kind of, I don't know, just lost the fire a little bit. Kind of situation where we became roommates and not really like romantic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of realized that our apartment was up. We had different opinions on where we wanted to live and stuff. And we just, you know, figured it was better for both of us if we just kind of moved on.
Well, Spin Sucks. Zone, you're getting hot.
You're getting a six-pack.
Single Hank this summer.
Yeah, your singies for the summer. All right, so just let's do like a couple quick questions so that way people aren't like, oh, wonder what this, wonder this. Number one, how much blame should we give Jake?
Zero blame.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, this is, you know, people.
It happened. It had already happened before that even happened.
Okay. Question number two, who should we be mean to, you or Rhea?
No one to be mean to. It was no one's fault. It's one of those things where she just, you know, there is a big age difference. We took like, this has been going on for a month. We kind of separated. And during that time, I thought about it and, you know, kind of realized like we started dating. She was 19, living at home by herself. I've been single, you know, working for Barcelona in Boston on the Dixie tour, like the first year of part of my take. Like, I know what's out there. I know what it's like. I've lived the life. But she's obviously like younger, had a tough time in Corona, and has just never really been out there. So I don't necessarily blame her for, you know, wanting to like see what's out there and stuff. You're only young once. And I'm just at a place where I'm not really trying to like go crazy and party and have fun and stuff. I'm older and just kind of trying to relax. So
very mature.
Yeah. I mean, it's very sad. It's been a tough month, but I do think, you know, I'm just happy it's not like a toxic or like dramatic ending or anything like that.
So we're still everyone's being nice to Rhea. We're supporting Rhea. She's still a coworker of ours. We like Rhea. So it's not like that. This is for our younger listeners, sometimes this happens.
Yes.
And it's no one's fault, and it actually can just be a split. I know that's crazy.
And it's actually healthy to deal with it this way as opposed to just ignoring it.
Right.
Hoping things get better.
And
did you consider trying to have a child to save your relationship?
No. I think Norman, people probably wondering that. Yep. Norman, it was always her dog. That was never a question. It's just like it's a sad part of a much sadder situation. But, you know,
he's going to stay out of the podcast now because it is Rhea's dog. So we're going to respect that.
Right.
So we're not going to bring up Normie.
Yeah, I know that. I do. I am. Obviously, you know, listeners and stuff, you can't control them. They're probably going to troll whatever. But I am asking you guys. I know the situation will come up where you want to make a joke. And I
the
would appreciate
only joke
it if you didn't.
I want to make is I want to make Jake feel uncomfortable. Is that okay?
I don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable.
I can't make Jake feel uncomfortable.
No, I mean, it's not Jake's fault. I feel bad. He's going to feel terrible as it is. Yeah, he's going to. The only thing that
just a feel really
can
bad.
Can I make him feel a little uncomfortable?
Hank is my podcast brother.
That
I want him to be happy.
Oh my God. hear that? You're the older brother, Jake?
What?
Okay, that's it. That was good. That's all I wanted. That was enough. That was enough uncomfortable, Jake.
Did you, right. Can I, I'll just ask this one time. Did you teach her how to put the ice cube on?
I told her about it. I never really went through the parting process, gift. Though.
Okay. But yeah, no, Hank, we obviously have your back. Yep. Everyone, I think the AWLs will actually surprise you here in being like, hey, you know, he said his piece. Let's all just chill out with it. But yeah, that's adults. Mm-hmm. Adult things happen, and we like Rhea. We're not going to stop liking Rhea. We love Hank. We're not going to stop loving Hank. Mm-hmm. And Jake, you're a good boy, too.
And... you know, great way to maybe, you know, get through some of the lonelier times might be to get a companion, some sort of cat, make great roommates.
Or a roommate?
No, no roommates, no cats
what
for
about
now.
Roommates with dogs?
Nope, definitely nope. Not. Definitely
you,
not.
You would, living I would, with Billy would actually Philly, be the meanest thing of all
yeah,
time.
Yeah, Philly's dreams would come true within like probably a week.
He killed himself. Why? Because he broke up with his girlfriend? No, because he had to live with Billy.
But yeah, I mean, it is sad. I obviously love Rhea still, though. We're cool. It's not, you know, it's nothing nothing too dramatic. I think when people hear that type of news, they're like, oh, what happened? But it was more of just, you know, it was a long time coming, kind of, and it's probably better for both of us this way.
And shout out you for giving me almost a heart attack, because I think my inner dad now kicks in when you texted me and PFT last week. And you're like, hey, can I talk to you guys real quick before you leave? And I was like, okay, someone died. And I was like, I sprinted. I haven't sprinted in 5 years. I sprinted to the studio from my desk.
Yeah, because we don't send those text messages to each other.
No, guys. I mean, yeah, we don't. That's what it's more like. And I know we don't really. We did talk about it. It was kind of a recurring thing over the years. So it was more just like for the record, because obviously, like going forward, you know, I'm not going to be in a relationship with a dog anymore. So it's more just to have it on the record.
I thought you were quitting to go to Spotify to do the Caller Daddy podcast.
I wish.
And I walked in the room and Big Cat's, the first thing he said was, Hank's quitting.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if he was serious or not. Give you the same
scare. No, I had the scare when he texted us. All right. Billy, you got to follow that. Billy, there was actually great feedback from Billy's recap on Friday. No, I'm serious.
No pressure.
I got to follow it up.
Anyway, being positive, we're positive vibes only podcast.
This has been a pretty heavy show, if you think about it.
Oh, with the Greg Olsen.
Yeah, well, the Greg Olsen, but that's the thing where it's like it has been sad, and then it's like you hear stories like that, and you're instantly like, all right, life is not that bad.
Right.
This could be worse. You know, everything's going to be all right.
Everybody gas up Hank.
Right. Gas up our boy. Yeah. Gas up our boy.
Your beard looks amazing today.
Thank you, Billy. Yeah. I appreciate it.
You look taller.
I'm going to find something. Give me a second.
You pronounce every word. You actually did better with pronunciation today than Jake did.
It's a fact. That's nice.
Hank, I've always been jealous of how you're able to handle your weed.
Thank you. That's taken a long time for me to get to that point.
Yeah, so. No, I have. I've been like, that guy can blaze.
If you
and
didn't,
like not be like, you can do it. Like I blaze and I just fucking lose my mind.
It's if the ADD.
You didn't respond to my email, I wouldn't have this job.
That's about you, Jake.
Sure, yeah.
No, I'm thanking him.
I'm just kidding. All right, I'm done. I'm done making Jake uncomfortable.
That was a mistake. Thanks for pointing out my mistakes.
So him responding to that email started everything, the wheels in motion. Mm-hmm.
The Chinese food order tonight was fire.
It was really good.
One of my best. Thank you.
He made it.
Can you make that clip for me? I just love having Billy back. He really is like the broest. Chinese food order was fire.
Come on.
And you're really good at balanced sports, too.
I love having you back.
You haven't
really,
crashed
genuinely.
In like a year?
No, he crashed a couple weeks ago.
What'd you call it?
Balanced sports. You're good at balancing on things.
Tony Hawk is one of the best balanced sporters of all
time.
He
is. I'm a foot-based sports guy myself.
Gymnastics.
Hank actually has really pretty eyes.
Whoa.
Hank works his ass off, too.
Yeah,
literally.
But have you ever looked in Hank's eyes?
Oh, you know what? This is actually a good time. Let's do this right now real quick. This is also a serious thing. July 4th schedule, so we're not going to have a show on Monday. July 5th is Monday. We're not going to have a show because we're not going to do a show on that July 4th. And Hank and Liam are going to take the week off vacation-wise. No jokes. This is not a joking thing.
Everyone's getting married.
Everyone needs some
Shout
time
out
to
Maddie and Drew.
Yep, everyone needs Max B., everyone needs some time to take off, so they're going to take it. We're going to have two other guys, Youngstown Bob and Jake, are going to not our Jake, another Jake, are going to come in,
Jake.
and they're going to guest produce on Wednesday and Friday. So let's get ahead of that. No jokes about it. Liam and Hank work their fucking asses off. When we finish the podcast every night, they're still here for fucking 4 hours later. So they deserve some time off. So there'll be a no joke zone. Fair?
Fair.
Fair.
Yep.
Sometimes PFT and I forget that, like, we can just sit down and put on the mics and produce and put out a show.
And then it's over when we
right,
leave. Yeah.
Right. So we have to remind ourselves that there's a lot more that goes into it. All right, Billy, let's do it.
I think that the biggest thing that's going to come out of tight end U is that all the tight ends are going to get man bums.
Mm.
Okay. Like, think about it.
I like
Kittle
that.
Got Hockenson to do it. So I think that's going to spread.
Okay.
You have to... There has to be like a certain level of physical imposition that you have to carry about you in order to pull off a man bun. Yeah. Like, I can't do a man bun. Gareth Bale has the worst man. Did you see his man bun today?
Yeah.
I want to cut his head off.
Yeah.
His entire face every time I see that.
Yeah. I think it's one or the other. You got to be a really like imposing physical guy like a tight end, or you have to be a small slender guy and people are like, what's his deal?
Artistic?
Like he could do something to me.
Trevor Lawrence's brother could pull off a man bun.
There's no in-between. No. Like, if I had a man bun, it would be the worst man bun of all time.
Yes.
And
why'd
then,
you laugh at that so much?
Because it's insane how accurate it is.
It would be terrible.
They should do more pool games in the Olympics. Have, like, Olympic sharks and minnows and Marco Polo.
Dimmy. Okay. Like, Marco Polo
real,
would be sick.
Real water sports.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's it?
Perfect.
Okay.
Velociraptors are the size of a chicken.
Billy has graded himself a perfect.
57.
All right. 69.
18.
8.
6.
Velociraptors are the size of a chicken.
Is that true?
Fraud dinosaurs.
Frauds.
64. No one had 64.
Is that a new one?
N64.
One time.
Ooh. One time. What date? I'm kind of low-key in a weird way obsessed with the lottery statistics.
December 1st, 2020.
Wow.
Wow.
Like, what were we doing that?
December 1st, 2020.
What day of the week was that?
What NFL week was that? That was probably week 12?
Somewhere around there. Maybe, week 12 or 13. That
Derrick Henry
right.
probably had 200 yards that day.
December.
I think it was week 15.
What?
December. Sorry, what? That was December.
It was a Tuesday.
Jake.
It was December 12th. No.
Wow, Jake. I mean,
week 12.
He's just going through a lot, Hank.
Love you guys.
Yeah, I'm worried about Jake.
Kittle?
The biggest the thing we got out of this spot. Talking away. No, I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today's not the day to find you and shy away. No, I'll be coming for your lover. Coming for your lover, take on me, take me on. I'll be gone in a needless to say, I want to send it, but he's stolen away. Slowly learn life is okay, say up to me. It's for to be safe and sorry. It's for to be safe and sorry. Take on me. Take. I'll be coming for you anyway. I'll be coming for you anyway. Take on.